Welcome to the Film on the Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:07 British Summer Time. Today is October 1st. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, because it really has been quite eventful. In stock markets, leading markets such as those in the Asian region have continued to push on to the upside, and they finished out the week in really fine fettle, with the Indonesian market close to its highs. The Indian market consolidated in the early part of the week but broke upwards from this little range in here today. Brazil is above the 70,000 level for the first time in a number of months. Elsewhere in Latin America, you have the Peruvian market continuing to extend this breakout from a one-year range. Going back to Asia, you have the Philippines, Korea, Thailand, Singapore, all doing really quite well and holding these breakouts from ranges. And the financials across these regions are also reconfirming the bullish outlook that is persisting in this region. When we look at Wall Street, the Dow and the S&P have been largely consolidating this week. They've held the region of their 9-month ranges, and there's little evidence yet really to suggest that that's anything more than what they're doing is just consolidating at the upper side of their range, and for the most part, holding on to what have been very impressive gains. The Nasdaq, which has been leading on the upside, has held the majority of its gains. And when one looks at some of the more global players on the Nasdaq, they're pushing on to new high ground or pushing out of multi-month or indeed multi-year basis. The cloud computing sector, which has all the hallmarks of the next big thing, is outperforming in no uncertain terms. And just about every major software company or data warehousing or company that could be involved in data warehousing is coming out with some sort of cloud strategy. And the shares are certainly confirming that that is where investors think that the next big thing is. Canada, which has been ranging for really quite a persistent amount of time, also broke upwards this week and held on to the gain. So we're seeing that higher growth regions, particularly in the world's population centers and in the commodity producing countries of Latin America, are continue to outperform. And companies that have leverage to the growth of the global middle class are continuing to show that they are sound long-term bets. Because these companies have a global franchise and because they have really quite reliable cash flows, a large number of them are paying really quite respectable dividends. And given the extent to which we've seen that government bond yields have collapsed over the last few months, then some of these equities are really quite competitive. And not only are they competitive, but they have the absolute performance in terms of price action to back that up. So if you type aristocrat or aristocrats into the search engine, you'll come up with a number of lists of stocks that have been paying out consistently high dividends for a significant period of time, and those that are leveraged to the growth of the global middle class are showing quite a bit of relative strength and are probably worthy of consideration in just about any kind of portfolio. Elsewhere this week, gold has pushed on to new high ground. It's been up on consecutive days and indeed consecutive weeks. It's finishing out the week in the region of $1,316, up $8 in here today. And this is a powerful breakout to new high ground. I suppose when it broke upwards and ran last September, it was a bit disappointing in that it petered out rather early. And this is a change in the rhythm of what has been a remarkably consistent advance, because we've had breakouts on the gold price in 2005, 7, and 2009, and this is another breakout in September or October in 2010. So, from going from a 2-year breakout period to a consecutive year breakout. That's a pickup in the pace of gold's bull market, and we're definitely entering the third psychological perception stage, which means that we're a lot closer to what could be characterized as a gold fever. Now, we don't really have a catalyst for that yet, and it probably is worth spending some time in thinking about what a catalyst might be to initiate the kind of mania that would turn gold into a really big bubble. Now, of course, it's been going up for nearly 10 years, so the gold story is certainly gaining credence. And because we have this competitive devaluation going on between, particularly between the major currency providers of the world, so the U.S. dollar and the euro, the pound, and the yen, increasingly investors are having a lot less faith in paper money. And the supply of government bonds has increased remarkably over the last couple of years. And we have to bear in mind that if we were to take the labels off the chart and just ask someone, if something's been going up for nearly 30 years and supply is exploding close to an all-time high, would you characterize that as topping activity? And if you were to strip out all of the inflation and deflationary types of arguments, I think you'd have to answer in the affirmative. And I suppose back in the early 1980s and late 70s, gold accelerated to its peak in the region of 800 from an extremely low level in a very short period of time as yields soared. Now, back then, it was because of inflationary pressures. We certainly don't have inflationary pressures right now, and government bond prices have soared and yields really plummeted because of deflationary pressures and the rather dubious argument that they offer some form of safe haven. What a possible catalyst could be to drive investment demand in gold to a type of mania could be that people lose faith in government paper. So we would see government bond yields going up, not because of massive inflationary pressures, but perhaps more because people have simply lost faith in the paper that these governments are issuing. And I believe that that is a realistic possibility at some point over the next few years, given the extent to which that these governments have been printing this stuff and the continued threat of quantitative easing. Because quantitative easing is quite simply debasing the currency in modern terms. Government bond yields are at pretty close to historic lows. Now, over the last month, we've seen that prices have pulled back quite sharply and found support and have rallied once more. But they haven't pushed to new high ground, with the exception of the JGB. And it continues to look like they've hit at least a medium-term top. Confirmation of that would, of course, be a clear downward dynamic or a key reversal for bond prices below or in the region of their August highs, and a lower low. We don't have that just yet, so there's still a degree of conjecture to the medium-term top hypothesis. But given the extent to which stock markets are performing, and the way that commodities are pushing to the upside, the deflationary hypothesis, I think, is running out of ground. What is probably a more realistic scenario is that we're going to have some stagflation, perhaps in the USA or in Europe, because commodity prices have done really quite well in the last few months. Copper was firmer by 3.5 cents in here today. It was as high as 372 cents earlier on today, and that's pulling away from the psychological $3.50 area and pushing on towards the $4 area. Now, $4 has been a psychological area of resistance for copper for about the last 4 years, and the fact that you have copper within striking distance of its high. Tin, which has been the leader all along, is currently testing its high, its 2008 high, and the rest of the industrial metals are all in varying stages of recovery, but there are certainly none of them making new lows. When we move into the soft commodities sector, the sugar price has pulled back in the last couple of days, but is still at a reasonably high level. Coffee is also quite high, and the grains, which had really accelerated out of these bases that have been progressing for much of the last couple of months, have encountered a little bit of resistance in here today, particularly, well, I suppose, in the last couple of days. Corn was softer by 30 cents in here today. If my memory serves me correctly, 30 cents is the limit on corn, so it could be limit down today. But it had accelerated up to the $5 area, and it was probably in need of a little bit of consolidation. Wheat, which has been the leader, has pulled back below the $7 level, and soybeans, which has probably been the most consistent of them, has now had a larger reaction within what has been an impressive advance, and it was down nearly 50 cents in here today. So it does look like the grains have encountered a little bit of profit taking into the end of the quarter, and I think probably upward dynamics are now required to really indicate that demand is coming back into the equation. Rough rice was relatively unchanged in here today and has a very consistent advance. It's probably been coming from really considerably more depressed levels than the grains and hasn't had the same degree of speculative interest. So it might be a better indication of what's actually going on. Orange juice has also held the breakout from the year-long range and what was a bit firmer into the end of the week. So we're seeing that industrial commodities are either pressuring their highs or pushing onwards from small consolidations. The soft commodities sector has run into a little bit of resistance, but is still at reasonably high levels. The precious metal sector, gold is pushing on to new high ground. Palladium is testing its April highs. Platinum is extending its breakout from a reasonably well-defined trading range, having found support in the region of the 200-day moving average, and silver is back above $22. So we're seeing that the commodity sector is performing very well indeed. The stock markets, particularly in higher growth areas, which are dominated by the world's population centers, are outperforming in no uncertain terms. And sectors within those, and it's the same sectors across all of those markets that are outperforming, are very much consumer focused. So you've got consumer cyclicals and consumer durables, healthcare, and indeed the banking sectors in all of those economies are doing very well indeed, with the possible exception of China on the banking shares, but the healthcare and consumer shares and electronics and technology are all doing very well indeed in these emerging markets. The big long-term theme is a relatively simple one, and like all major bull markets, the inspiring theme is always a relatively simple idea that can capture the imagination of vast numbers of investors, and in this case, it's the greatest urbanization in history. We have unprecedented numbers of people entering the global middle classes, and in fact, hundreds of millions of people being raised out of poverty and into the middle classes, where the GDP growth of these countries is rising well in excess of population growth. So the average living standard is improving at really quite a remarkable pace. And that's fueling demand for just about every kind of commodity, but also for the kinds of goods and services that people in previously more developed countries have come to take for granted. And it's driving what promises to be a major, major bull market, and we're really only in the early stages of this. Whereas in the USA, North America, and Japan, we have this problem with over leverage, but in Asia and in much of Latin America, they're pretty under-leveraged. We're starting to see that China has built an incredible amount of infrastructure over the last 20 years and are starting to migrate their investment into what are now more productive means, such as improved healthcare and social security. But the favorite to win the Brazilian election is talking about rebuilding the country's roads, their power, improving education, and is promising a massive building boom. So demand for infrastructure is only beginning to catch up in Brazil because they have phenomenal bottlenecks due to a lack of infrastructure, and the same is very true of India. Many people have despaired of India being able to get its situation sorted out, and the Commonwealth Games certainly haven't helped India's image abroad. But these countries are coming from a very low base. So, even minor improvements on the infrastructure front can have really outsized benefits in terms of GDP growth. And that's a secular theme. That's something that we can expect to continue for quite a long time to come. And it's a pretty similar story across all of the population centers. In Europe, Turkey is another market that is breaking upwards to new high ground. It's got a large population, and the economy is booming right now. It's probably not in the same growth domain or governance domain as some of these other markets, but it's certainly doing the business right now. And again, this is a secular theme where the major population centers of the world are beginning to reclaim their rightful place in terms of the weighting of where wealth is distributed in the world. And that's likely to continue for a significant period of time. In the short term, we see that the stock markets are, in the West at least, ranging at the or consolidating in the region of the upper sides of their ranges. There's nothing really to question yet whether they're going to be capable of surmount or pushing back up to their April highs. But there isn't, I suppose it's reasonably hard to envisage a scenario that will push them very much beyond their April highs in the immediate future. If we take the medium term, Wall Street and the Euro Stoxx 600 have been broadly ranging for the better part of a decade, and they're currently rallying from the lower side of the range. So if we take a 3 to 4 year view, there's this distinct possibility that we're going to see the S&P and the Stoxx 600 pushing back up to test their 2000 and 2007 peaks over the next 3 or 4 years. But longer term, if those markets push up to the upper side of what are very lengthy ranges, then we're going to see massive outperformance in some of these emerging markets, where they are not just going to push up by a few percent a year, but by probably many multiples. And we've already seen some of that happen this year. Given the fact that so many of these Asian markets in particular are really quite overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages, the potential that they're going to pull back violently and in a mean reversion has increased quite considerably. And that is something to bear in mind when thinking about initiating new positions, because the best time to be selling is when something has become wildly overextended relative to its 200-day moving average, and the best time to buy would be when it's pulling back and finding support in the region of one of those averages. And that certainly is something that we need to bear in mind as these things continue to push onwards. We do not have any evidence just yet that this fantastic medium-term advance in emerging markets has ended. The chances are that when we do get a signal like that, it will have a high degree of commonality, so we'll get clear downward dynamics across a large number of markets in a very short period of time. And there's nothing yet to suggest that has happened, with the dollar at the moment really quite weak. We're seeing that the euro is up to 137.83, and the US dollar has weakened considerably against not only the euro or the pound or the Swiss franc or the yen, but also against a large number of emerging market currencies, or Asian currencies, or Latin American currencies would be the better way to classify them. I don't believe that we're going to have a dollar crisis for the simple reason that if the dollar goes down very much beyond where it bottomed out in 2008 and again in 2009, we're going to have talk about a dollar crisis, and we know what the response would be to something like that we'd have a universal intervention, and manufacturers and exporters in countries that their currencies have suddenly surged against the US dollar would be crying blue murder, and there would be a massive intervention to strengthen the dollar or to weaken their own currencies. So I don't think we're going to have a dollar crisis, but neither do we have any evidence in the short term that this dollar decline is over. The dollar's decline is certainly helping to juice the performance of the commodity sector. When the dollar turns around again, that is going to put pressure on some of these commodities. And that could spell the end for this, what has been a remarkably impressive advance in gold and some of the other precious metals. So that is something to bear in mind, because this dollar is becoming a little bit overextended in the very short term, and the more overextended it becomes, the greater the possibility is that it's going to snap back in a sharp reaction. So again, that is certainly something that I'll be watching for. When we look at the dollar index, or the Asian dollar index, or the Latin American dollar index, they're very different charts, because you have this competitive devaluation between the dollar and the euro particularly. But when you look at something like the dollar in against the Asian currencies, those Asian currencies are all appreciating against the US dollar, particularly the Singapore dollar, because Singapore appears to be willing to accept a stronger currency in order to boost its safe haven status, and has very clear ambitions about becoming the Switzerland of Asia. But it's also because we've had the Chinese yuan has resumed its advance, albeit really quite slowly. But because the yuan is appreciating, that does take pressure off of other markets in the area, and they can let their currencies also appreciate against the US dollar. So Asian currencies are continuing to appreciate, and of course they're being driven higher by the flood of money that's flowing into those markets, that's driving the stock markets to increasing heights. So the appreciation of the Asian currencies is also worth watching in the context of timing, when the next medium term peak will be reached by some of these stock markets. And it's a very similar story for Latin America. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, but wish all the best to all of you.